S&P, the ASX stocks.
This is Motley Fool Money.
Welcome to Motley Fool Money, the podcast that loves their Uncle Warren and can't wait to hear from him again this year. I'm Andrew Page and with me is Scott Phillips.
G'day, Andrew. G'day, Phil. You have an Uncle Warren too.
We do. Uncle Wazza. Mr. B.
Let me stick.
Yeah, stick with the script.
Remember, remember the Trump pump thing you tried?
I'm still hopeful on that. That's going to catch on any day now.
You keep wearing away.
The eternal
optimist. You keep flogging that dead horse, mate. You keep flogging that dead horse.
What are we talking about today?
I don't know.
Well, it's earnings season, and there is a bunch of results out on the ASX. We have to talk about some of the bigger name ones. We'll never get through them all, but we thought we'd touch on some of the big ones. And as we've suggested there at the start, Mr. Buffet is penning his annual letter, and that is out this coming weekend. So that is something for the investment nerds to get excited about.
I still don't know what you're calling Mr.
We certainly are. And then it's my turn to get on the high horse. I'm going to rant about, I don't know, we'll figure that out when it comes. But first,
does that mean you have to wait? Does that mean you have to hold your rant for the rest of this episode? Just to be clear.
Mate, I actually haven't planned that far ahead is the real truth of it. But I've never short of ideas.
What I'm worried about, though, is making sure you don't rant between then and now. That's all.
90% of what I say is a rant in some way, shape, or form. This is a formalised rant. So there's the distinction for you.
At some point, I'm just going to drop the words real estate agent and then just step back. I'll go and get a drink, grab a coffee. Liam and I'll go and play a game of poker or two and then we'll come back.
Can I tell you, I had a really great real estate agent experience throughout the week.
No, you can't.
No?
Work.
Okay.
No. I saw you careening off the track there, mate. You weren't coming back. As soon as I let you get past that cutoff point, it was all over.
That's why it's a two-man show. earnings season. We get companies report every 6 months.
Yes, we did some last week.
Yeah, we did. 31st of December was the cutoff, and companies are now reporting. Let's talk about some of the bigger ones. I've got to start off, mate, with this one because you had what we in the Motley Fool call a bit of a spiffy pop.
A spiffy pop
throughout the week. I want you to do is tell me the name of the company and what the hell a spiffy pop is.
So the name of the company is Corporate Travel Management.
Okay.
The code is CTD.
What do they do?
They provide travel for management for corporate.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't know how they come up with the name
I
of the
do
company.
Know because you, I don't know if you're aware, but you do mention it quite a bit on the show. And for good
Me?
Reason. For good reason.
You brought it up this time.
I did. Well, I have to give credit where it's due. So it's a company that provides corporate travel management solutions. It's
what
been
can
on,
we call that company?
It's been on the scorecard for a while. Yeah. And it had a spiffy pop yesterday.
It did.
What's a spiffy pop?
A spiffy pop is a name coined or a term coined by our co-founder, David Gardner, mm-hmm. in the US. And it describes a company whose shares go up in a day more than what you paid for them.
So let me get my head around this. So let's say I bought shares at a dollar,
mm-hmm.
and a few years later they're worth $10.
Yep.
Oh, let me make this a bit more realistic. They're up $100. They're $100 now.
Yes.
And now shares have gone up $1 in a single day.
Yes. So basically, you get more than what you paid for them back as capital gains in a single trading day.
Well done, mate.
Thank you, mate. I was pretty happy.
That is awesome.
So we recommended it back in August 2012 mm-hmm. to our members of Share Advisor.
Yeah.
If you want to come and join us, let us know. We'll hook you up.
Yep.
Fool.com.au/ There you go. We will sort you out. Yeah, so August 2012 yep. recommended corporate travel management at a price of $2.26.
Mm.
Yesterday, the shares were up $2.90. So more than a spiffy pop.
That's
the
awesome.
First one for Share Advisor has been a decent couple, five and a bit years coming. But yeah, it's pretty good. The shares are now about $24. So it's already a 10-bagger anyway. So
yep.
that's the first thing.
Yep.
You kind of have to have that
sort
of number to get a spiffy
yep.
pop in the first place.
Yep.
But yeah, really, really strong result. And look, you know what? Excited about the share price, of course. Happy for our members, more importantly. But the best thing is the company still delivered profit that was up at 35%. So just continuing to grow at a real rate of knots.
You know, so it was a great result. That's why it did the spiffy pop.
Mm.
There's a couple of lessons here that we have to, before we move on, we have to reiterate. And I'm putting my hand up for being guilty of this.
Mm.
I came and joined the team back in 2014. And I remember one of the first meetings I had with you, you were just preaching how wonderful this company was and how I need to get on it.
I
feel as though I've missed the boat on that one was my first thought.
Yep.
And my second thought was, it's still pretty expensive. It was trading on a pretty high PE, and PEs are something we'll come back to later on. And then you actually wanted to re-recommend it. So you wanted to add it to the scorecard again. I think how many times have you done that now?
Only three.
So the original and then three others.
No, two more.
Oh, sorry, two more. Okay.
Two more. Yep.
And every time I've thought, if I didn't say it to you, I'll admit to you now. I kind of thought, really? I mean, good on you. You got in early. But and therein lies the lesson, I think, is it's that we've talked about all the time and for good reason is this anchoring problem. It's gone up so much. I've missed it. It's too late. It's expensive. And it all just forgets that it's obviously investing is about the future and it still has great potential. As most recently as this week, we find out that in the last 6 months, they've grown their earnings at 30%.
Right, on top of 30% the year before and 30% the year before. And that's kind of the story. Look, I, you know, we...
And you still got it as a buy, right?
Yeah, exactly. Look, we bring these things up partly because we like to blow our own trumpets.
You got to sing your praises when it happens.
It happens so rarely, mate. People throw a whole lot of negativity at us and we'll take the positive.
Just don't talk about them. The bad ones, right?
Exactly. No, but so, there's also another reason. And the reason is kind of, it's the Warren Buffett reason, right? We'll get back to also to Uncle Warren in a minute. But... Mm-hmm. You know, Buffett is a genius, and he speaks sensibly and plainly, and you can learn a heap from Warren Buffett.
Mm.
But if he had never had an investment success, he'd be an obscure stockbroker's assistant living in the middle west of the US, no one ever heard of or heard from, and all that wisdom would have been lost. And so to some degree, having some of these wins very occasionally give us a little bit of credibility, I suppose, or a platform to some degree to actually share some of this investment wisdom that you've just talked about. And I think... For me, there's two things that shine through from corporate travel. The first is the benefit of what I'll call benign neglect, which is also stealing one from Uncle Warren.
Yep.
That idea of kind of find a good business and let it do its thing. You know, the share price...
Don't overthink it.
It's been up and down. It's been down 20% on more than a few occasions during that journey between $2 and $24.
Yep.
You know, it was 24, then fell back to just on 20, only literally just very recently. Mm. It had fallen from... I think 22 back to 18 or 16 at one point.
Percentage terms, that's pretty decent.
Right. And so, you know, there's reasons why you could have gone, oh, party's over, better get out, better sell. This is probably as good as it gets. I had a member on the boards yesterday say, oh, how much can you go up in the next 6 months then? It's already this much. It's like, well, you could have said that at any point between 226 and 24. You know, at any point.
And by the way, if you're only focusing on the next 6 months, you've started from a losing position.
This is true. And that's the second thing is the benefit of holding for the long term, letting good businesses run.
Yeah.
And as you said, averaging up. You know, we're all kind of preconditioned to say, well, I bought at 10, so if I force to 8, I'll buy some more because it's now cheaper.
Mm.
If it goes from 10 to 15, I'm like, well, it's already expensive. I better not buy any more.
Yeah.
The lesson from corporate travel is if you have a good business that's got good fundamentals, it's still growing,
is
a high-quality company, you want to be adding more when the business justifies that faith. And that's why, frankly, mate, you say you were concerned. You know, the first recommendation was at $6.60 from memory. And that feels like, I mean, that's 75% below today's price, right?
So that's still, but it's still, at the time, it was like, it's triple.
Right.
We're going again.
And I remember doing the rec going, oh, this... I could really look stupid here. This is crazy. What? And then again, I did it at $18 again a year or so ago.
Mm.
That's still up meaningfully since then. You know, 40-50%, whatever the number is. And again, say, or maybe it's $16. In any case, that same thing was like now it's you know, 5, 6, 7 times the price I originally paid. Yeah. Surely that's too much. And it really was. And I will say, every single time, you know, we are standing on the shoulders of giants at the Motley Fool. Those are lessons I've learned from my colleagues here in Australia, our colleagues in the US. I'm a better investor because I'm part of this foolish community, personally, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. Those are things I wouldn't have done 7, 8, 10 years ago. And so, you know, to be able to hold on, to be able to average up as prices get away from me, those are things I've had to learn myself. And hopefully I'm passing those on to our listeners.
Before we move on to, and just in the interest of balance, like obviously you've had some stinkers along the way as well.
Dude, don't bring me down. I'm doing it.
And well, stay with me because
I'm
hoping I'm going to thread the needle in a nice way here because we all do, right?
Thanks, we all make some stinkers.
And the trouble is that what a lot of us do, and I've mentioned it before, is that when we have an investment that does well, you know, short term or something, maybe buy a corporate trade, it goes up 20%, you go, fantastic. You know, there's all these stupid cliches in the market. You never go broke taking a profit, you know. Yeah, take it while it's there. Oh, annualize that return. And you're tempted to take it. But when things fall, and they fall, they can fall. You know, we've both had experiences where things have fallen 50% plus.
Yep.
And the thing is that the reality is you didn't dump all of your money into this one company. We haven't created an investment service where it's just about this. You need these kinds of ones there to balance out everything else. And you'll never get them if all you're going to be doing is constantly trimming the flowers and watering the weeds, as the saying goes, which is continuing to hang on to the stinkers and getting the hell out of the winners as soon as you've booked a little bit of a profit.
So I screwed up on Thorn Group. We sold that with a 32% loss.
Yeah.
Origin Group, a 50% loss. Mm. Codan, 64% loss. Loss. Mm. I'm reading through the scorecard now, my tale of woe. Collection House, 35%.
It's only half Collection our podcast, mate. We can't get through all the losses.
But here's the thing, right? So for all of those, and just to illustrate your point, the average share advisor scorecard recommendation is up 60.4% compared to the market up 26% as we speak. That's a very significant outperformance. And I don't say that to brag, but to make your point, which is that despite those losers, it is the winners that really, and those multi-bagger winners, the ones that go double, triple, quadruple your money, if I'd have wanted to take 100% profit, I would have sold it at $4.50.
Yes.
Felt very, very smart.
Yep.
And then missed out on the rest of that gain.
And that average scorecard performance is a lot worse off as a result.
And I will say, too, my biggest mistake, which isn't on those big losers, is selling out Domino's at a profit at about $13.
Yes.
So again, even the ones that look good, the missed opportunity that you know, I didn't go broke taking that profit, yep. But I'll tell you what, if I'd held on to Domino's, it quadrupled from there. In fact, it was up at sixfold after that. But
they're the ones that haunt me at night. It's not right. So much the ones I've lost on, it's the ones I let go early.
Now, mate, it's earnings season. We just spent 10 minutes talking about corporate travel, which I frankly appreciate. And I do want to say one very quick thing, which is that I own shares of Corporate Travel Management, lest I be accused of talking my book. To clear disclosure there, I own Corporate Travel.
And I don't, for all the reasons that, stupid reasons that I described before, and I should rectify that. And now's
never
probably a good opportunity.
Still a buy.
That's the thing, right? There's the lesson.
Right.
Let's talk about a completely different company, also related to travel, though, I suppose, is Sydney Airports.
Maybe not that different, right?
And again, disclosure, this is one of our recommendations. The earnings that they released were, they saw a 9% increase near enough. They increased the dividend by 11% here. This is a business. I mean, talk about a mature business, right? Like they have been around forever. It's not like they can just build another runway, you know, plow over a bunch of houses and do it. Yeah. So, but it is a business that is near enough to a monopoly as you can get, and they absolutely take advantage of that position here. So they saw a huge increase in passenger numbers, especially from China, 17% increase. Now, all of those tourists not only means more seats, more bums on seats for the planes and more fees in that regard, but also they do a lot of shopping when they're at Sydney Airport as well. And there's a retail division there. Yep. Retail sales are up 13%. So for my money, that was an outstanding result, a bit better than I was expecting. Yep. They are yielding near enough to 6%, right? And we are in a low interest rate world. You've got a business like this that, as far as I'm concerned, will still be around in 100 years' time, unless we're all teleporting all over the place, and maybe it won't be, but unless that's not the case. And they will be, look, tourist numbers will ebb and flow. But overall, I think this is, if you're an income investor, this is just a no-brainer. Yes, you are not going to get corporate travel type returns. I should disclaim that here. This is not something that's going to triple for you anytime soon, but it is going to be a solid performer year in, year out, and it's going to give you a great income stream. So a great result and one that I'm happy to have as a buy.
And a market-beating buy. From dividend investors.
Yeah, it's really nice. Yeah, well done. It's done well. Early days, though, yeah. It's only been there for a year, so you don't want to crow about it too. It's so short term.
From the sublime.
Okay, to the ridiculous.
Well, you said
which,
that, not me.
Which ridiculous have we got? Yeah, we've got a few.
We've got to go to Vocus, don't we?
We have to talk about Vocus. So, Vocus is another dividend investor recommendation that didn't work out so well.
Yeah.
Well, mate, they've cut the dividend, so it's a bit. Let's call this one a failure.
But you haven't recommended members sell?
Well,
so the show's not over just yet.
Well, let's do a quick recap. So these guys were just one of the real poster childs of the telco area. There was a lot of aggregation in that sector.
Yes.
Earnings were growing at incredible rates. They all were. TPG, Vocus. In fact, Vocus is an amalgamation of other telcos that they've now brought in. M2, perhaps the most notable of all of those. Amcom, the other one. And they were just going gangbusters until that growth avenue sort of ran out and the market
stopped, right?
Re-rated it. Which was one thing, and one thing that was always expected from our perspective. It was after that re-rating that we thought, well, it still makes sense.
Yeah.
As it turns out, all of those companies that they put together just didn't fit together that well. It was a very bloated entity. There was a lot of integration problems.
Can I say it's a mess?
It's a mess. Yeah, internally it's a mess. So it's one of these things that, you know, the investment bankers got together and said, look, if we add all of this together, we get 1 + 1 = 3. And very reasonable sort of assumptions. The trouble is in the dirty world of reality where you know, there are systems and processes and people, it just did not come together. Management have acknowledged that. They're trying to turn it around, but it has been a very hard slog. So they came out with their half-year results. Revenue was up. Operating profit was up a little bit, 0.8%. Again, that's sort of on an underlying basis when you exclude some one-off costs. But overall, it wasn't a disaster of a result, I didn't think. But shares have really been sold off again. They'd clawed their way back above $3 and then they've fallen all the way back down again. I think $2.30 or so at the latest read.
Mm-hmm.
To your point, so why not get out of it? Well, I just think that this is a business that has incredible assets, wonderful assets that I think a lot of people would be interested to own.
Which are?
They've got a wonderful network. They're building a Singapore cable between Australia and Singapore. It's actually going to be up and running in the latter half
of this
year. Bloody big telegraph poles. They got a lot of customers. They're winning market share on the NBN. So as I said, revenue was up here. The business at the top line is improving, but they've had to add a bunch of staff to sort of help with their processes. Their margins have come down a bit. They've also got a ton of debt, a bucket load of debt, $1 billion plus of debt. And I think the market's rightly worried about that. Part of the way that they're looking to solve that is they're going to flog off the Kiwi assets. Mm-hmm. They're hoping to get about $500 million or so for that. So that's going to hopefully cut their debt in half. I don't think they're going to get $500 million, frankly, but I think they'll get a good chunk of change for it.
You know what? If you're a buyer, you always want to buy from a forced seller, right? And Vocus is pretty much a forced seller. They put the white flag up and said, we want to get rid of this.
Yes.
So if you're a buyer, unless there's an auction going on,
yes,
you can pretty much name your price.
I think that's why I'm a little skeptical on them getting the price that they've
touted. That or the $500 million is undervaluing the company in the first place. They've already lowballed
it. I think the buyer's actually getting a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
But for my mind, I think we've talked a bit about it in previous episodes, this danger of, talking of Buffett, actually, he often says, you know, turnarounds rarely turn. Mm-hmm. And this is very much what you would class as a turnaround play. Mm. A business that has some pretty decent assets, a pretty decent opportunity, but it's lost its way. Management have recognized that. They're looking to turn things around. If you start from the position that this business isn't in terminal decline, in fact, they're going to sort of fix their problems. And I don't think these problems get fixed overnight. This is something that'll play out over a year plus.
Now, let me challenge that, because their Australian consumer business is in decline. They're struggling to kind of fight the good fight against Telstra and TPG.
Yeah.
Isn't that the big question for analysts and for investors, to say, can they really continue to grow in a market that's dominated by two other telcos who really have their stuff?
I don't know if they are in decline. I don't really know. In fact, they've been winning more clients in terms of the NBN. The enterprise division is doing rather well. Data centers is doing really well. So as you and I both know, none of these things move in a straight line. So we've had this wonderful trajectory and then a dip backwards. Is that the start of a decline? Potentially. Mm. Is it proof positive that it's in decline? I don't think so. Okay. I really don't. And the other thing is that the way I approach these things is you want to start from a position of healthy pessimism and say, well, let's assume that they really take a while to get back on track. And even when they do get back on track, it's never going to be spectacular. Mm. And let's value the business from that standpoint. And I've taken that approach, and I kind of think, geez, even when I assume that, I still think the market is pricing it too pessimistically. So yeah, for my money, it's an absolute hold. Mm-hmm. It's a speculative buy, if I can use that horrible term for those that think that they can turn around. But I don't think it's something you want to rush out of when the price is so heavily discounted. There's some interesting people on the board who are agitating for change, who have had some good success in terms of Bellamy's and elsewhere, that I think have recognized. But the thing is, when you've got a problem, the first challenge is to recognize that problem. Before you can do anything, you've got to acknowledge that there's a problem. And I think that they've done that. I think they know what needs to be fixed, and I think they're fixing it. And I think it's silly to let go at this stage.
All right. You mentioned hold and speculative buy in the same frame of conversation. I'm not going to let you get away with that.
No, I didn't think.
But I'm going to wait till next week. We won't do it now.
As I said, I thought Philips is going to have
it. holding you to account since 2014.
Fair enough. I appreciate it.
So shall we move on?
Yes.
Let's talk about A2 Milk. A2 Milk's results were out during the week.
A2.
They were bloody-tacular.
So A2, I've got to give a shout-out to our colleagues. Matt, we had on the program a few weeks back. And they had a triple spiffy pop.
So Motley Fool Pro, this was Matt Joss and Ryan Newman, the team there.
Yep.
Recommended A2, had triple spiffy pop.
Our friend Joe Mega was on board at the time too. And
sure it was a triple spiffy pop?
I thought it was. So I don't know, I might be getting that wrong.
It was definitely a spiffy pop. I'm not sure if it was a triple.
Or maybe I'm getting that wrong.
Anyway.
it's gone up incredibly.
I'm sure he will tell us either way. But either way, the members who followed that advice have at least got their money back in a single day's gain.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty impressive result. Revenue was up 70% for A2, and profit was up more than 100% on the previous year.
Yeah.
Those are spectacular numbers for a company that goes about effectively producing and selling an agricultural commodity.
Yeah.
You know, white milk is kind of the name that the supermarket types give this product range, because it's literally white milk. And generally, up until now, the story has been it's the most commoditized of commodities in the supermarket, because white milk is white milk is white milk. It's not colored, it's not flavored, there's nothing else going on.
Yeah.
It's just a single product, right?
Yeah.
And yet A2 have found a way not only to build a brand around it and to charge a premium for it, but also to export it around the world. Like white milk, it's a phenomenal story.
Yeah, and look,
go on.
Can I look? I think so. Their value prop is that it lacks a certain type of protein.
And I know where you're going with this one.
And then
settle down, listeners.
This will cause some people some aggravation from a digestive standpoint. It's absolutely true. I kind of class it. I think these things aren't black and white, but I kind of my analogy here.
Just a language warning, listeners. He's about to say snake oil.
My analogy here is with celiacs and people who are intolerant mm-hmm. to gluten. And, you know, you speak to any scientist or person who likes to deal with facts, and they will tell you that there is a certain portion of the population that cannot have gluten. I mean, if they do it, they get a really bad reaction. They're allergic to it. It's bad. You stay away from it. Mm. And yet every bloody cafe in the trendy parts of Sydney, all they sell is gluten products. And there are people with perfectly...
Gluten-free products,
gluten-free products, who have absolutely no digestive problem whatsoever. They just think, I don't know what gluten-free is. It sounds as though it's, you know, I'm interested in my health. It sounds as though something I need to avoid. So people self-diagnose. And I think that there is a bit of a phenomenon with this. I just know in my own personal experience, a lot of people say, oh, I only drink ATM. And you go, oh, great. You've got a bit of sensitivity to the particular protein. You go, what? No, it's just meant to be better for you. Well, why is it better for? Well, they said it's better. And you kind of have this phenomenon where I think it's, I don't know. I do think there is a degree of snake oil.
There we go.
To it. And there rant, I could go on. Here's the thing. Biases aside, and I will say that about Blackmores too. And Blackmores is a recommendation of mine. So I've got no problem with it per se.
Yep.
The reality is that this is a game of investment. As long as the business can sell more and make more money, that you will do well. And they're absolutely doing it. So,
On a personal level, I've missed out on A2 milk for myself and my members thus far. Not because of the snake oil concerns you have, Andrew, though mm-hmm. I do share some of that sentiment. Mm. More because I've always been concerned about... So to get A2 milk, you have to have cows that are genetically of a certain type, to use a horribly unscientific term, that only produce milk with the A2 protein. And so there's two types of proteins, A1 and A2 are they're called. And to some degree, my concern was that the herd sizes and the ability to produce enough A2 milk would be some sort of limiting factor. Mm. Thus far, the company's done a spectacular job of making sure I've been wrong. They've done a deal with Fonterra, the New Zealand dairy giant. Mm-hmm. It looks like they'll be fine. So, look, you know, to the extent I've been wrong thus far, it was oversupply concerns. We've seen the same with Bellamy's in a different context. So just because A2 works and Bellamy's doesn't make either case right. Mm. But that's it. Just a watch out. I'm not convinced they've completely solved those problems. Compound growth means that you have to have another 70% on last month, your 70% means a whole lot more cows, a whole lot more milk. But that's why they're making every post a winner.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, we've got to mention another one too. Mm. Jeez, we've got lots to talk about today. Is Altium. Altium is the one that has really been in focus for so many. Gosh, man, did I... You talk about missed opportunities. Altium was a wonderful success.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Andrew Page Confessional Half Hour.
You got to do it. You got to own it, right? And so we did wonderfully well for us. And at about... Jeez, I forget now, 11, 12 bucks, we sold out. And it wasn't because we didn't like the company. We didn't like what they were doing. We thought they had a wonderful future. But you've got to pay a sensible price. And the company has very consistently given some very specific guidance on what they expect to achieve in 2020, what kind of margins they'll get. And you can kind of just, you know, you can get out your napkin and your pen and you can sort of work out what is a reasonable price for those assumptions. And I started to question it at
those levels.
Just for
the record, not the officially supplied stationery and calculating tools of the Motley Fool.
Napkin.
Pen and napkin. We do actually use some other sophisticated stuff. We have some abacuses in the back room that we use as well.
There's a few abacuses. Yeah. And abacai? And man, they had a spectacular result. Super, super, super.
Now,
they haven't changed their guidance. Mm-hmm. And yet shares are now up around $18 or so. In fact, more than that. And it has been absolutely a spectacular result. It has caused me to sort of dust off the old abacus and the napkins. And
he's upgraded.
I upgraded
the tools.
Upgraded the tools. Well, I did kind of think maybe I was a little bit too conservative, but to what, mate, between you and me and our listeners, I have no way of wrapping my head around the valuation that is put out there at the moment. So if you're holding Altium, I'd say congratulations. You've done extremely well. You've proved that point of not overthinking these things too much. I should point out, as well, as a dividend service, it's very hard to maintain a recommendation when the yield is so low by virtue of a rising share price. but for me, you need to have some really, really, you have to basically expect that management are going to smash those forecasts, and they might. And not only that they will be sustaining a very long runway of growth after that 2020 milestone as well, which they might. But there is a term in the market called price for perfection. And that, I would say with Altium, it is that and more.
That was your view about Kogan too, as I recall, yeah?
Yeah, I still stand by that, by the
okay.
way.
So it's 10-12 on Friday morning, Thursday morning as we record this, and Kogan shares are up 10.9% today. That's fine.
It is a frothy market, my friend.
I hate to enjoy your misery too much, but I did say that the shares would do well. You said the shares would do badly. It behoves me for journalistic integrity reasons to mention that the share price is up.
Okay, let's also put a pin in that, because in another year or two's time, I'm more than happy to
revisit
that. A year
or two is extending the time frame now.
I'm a long-term investor, my friend. I'm not trying. I never said that it was going to fall into peace in the next few months.
Did, because we made our outrageous predictions. And that's exactly what you said.
It's only February, my friend. I've got time.
You said year or two. I'm just making very clear that we said the end of the year was our frame reference. Don't try and extend the frame just to make yourself happy here.
All right.
When it doubles by the end of the year, you'll say, again, Phillips, you were right. And I'll say, you know what? I really, really was.
I remain comfortable in my outlook.
Real money advice from real people. Not just a couple of dicks with a Porsche. Get more at fool.com.au/MMM.
I have to let you rant now for some godforsaken reason.
Oh, we're up to that, are we?
Yeah.
Well, look, this isn't so much a...
Did you hear the relish in his voice, Liam? Before you do, though, Andrew.
Oh.
I think Liam's got something for us.
Oh, yeah. I love it. Can I make that as my ringtone? I need to get the sound of it. That is just brilliant. I love it.
Delusions of grandeur, Mr.
Look, we mentioned briefly before this idea of a PE ratio. It's a term that gets thrown around. It's probably a little bit of jargon that if you're new to the market, you're not familiar with it. It's simply the price of a share divided by the earnings per share.
And it's a rough measure of the value or otherwise of the company you might be looking at buying.
If a company's earning a dollar, what is that company worth? Is it worth $10? Is it worth $5? It gives you a way to benchmark that. Okay. Rather than saying, what is this worth? I don't know, it's worth $10 because I think it is. I can sort of say, well, at 10 times earnings, that's reasonable.
And 10 times earnings is a PE of 10, just to bring it back. So
company
earns 10 bucks, earns a dollar, sorry.
Yep.
The market cap's 10 bucks.
Yep.
So you're paying $10 for a dollar of earnings.
Yes.
10 divided by 1 is 10.
Yep.
The PE is 10.
On average, over the long term, markets tend to be
around... A lot of qualifiers here.
Well, you have to, right? So, because at the moment, the average price earnings multiple of the market, according to Morningstar, is over 18. Now, traditionally,
just be careful here, because I think you're about to tell me that PEs don't matter, but then you're going to make a case the market's overvalued because the PE is high.
No. I'm just giving the lay of the land, my friend. Just trying to warn you. Giving the lay of the land.
And my job is to hold you to logical consistency.
I thank you for it. That's the kind of person you want to speak to in this game, frankly. The last person you want to
person you are. Thanks very much.
Well, the person you don't want to speak to in investing is the one who emphatically agrees with everything you say, because that way is the path of ruin. So
I'm going to shut up and let you rant. Go on.
So anyway, long-term average is around about 15. So the dirty, easy thumbsuck way of looking at a share is you say, hey, the PE is 8, ergo it's cheap, because you know market average is at the moment is well above that, and certainly even over longer time frames over that. And you can look at something that has a PE of 50 and say, my goodness, that is expensive. What's the PE of corporate travel management? Good example, actually.
I haven't checked this morning, but it was high 30s, 37, 38 times earnings, something
like
that.
Double the market.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, you get this, what Howard Marks likes to call first order thinking, which is at a peripheral level, that is really expensive.
And I'm going to quickly set some scene here, because traditionally, low PE stocks actually do beat higher PE stocks, statistically speaking, over time.
Yeah, they do, in fact. And there's an interesting...
So therefore, low PE is better.
Yes. The thing is, a lot of those studies is that when you do that over very long periods of time, over very, very large numbers of stock, you get an averaging effect where you there's a lot of truth in it. I think it's when you get to the specific that those kinds of generalizations can break down. My rant is on the fact that just because something has a PE of 100 doesn't mean it's expensive. And just because something has a PE of 2 doesn't make it cheap.
That's mathematically kind of impossible to
make that case. Well, here's the other thing. So generally speaking, and again, there's different ways of carving this up, but generally speaking, you take the earnings of the business, which is what they've reported. So this is, hey, we earned this last year. These are our earnings. Here's our price today, and that's how you do the calculation. The price of a share is based on its future earnings. If I buy corporate travel today, I do not get what it earned last year as a shareholder. I do not get what it earned in the previous years. All right. I get is exposure to its future earnings.
So if you buy a property, you're not getting like last year's rent, right?
Unfortunately not.
You get next year's rent
and the year after that. And as long as you hold it, that's the rent that you get. And in the world of finance, when you're saying, well, what is something really worth? The most logically, rationally consistent way of answering that question is, well, it's really just worth the sum of its future cash flows. We've talked about this a lot. Discounted back by an appropriate
rate.
I've talked about this a lot.
Yeah.
It's a really good mental model.
No, it's true, right? So if you're paying any price for anything, you only want to pay that price if you're going to get back as much as you paid and more to justify your purchase in the first place.
If you're going to give me $100 next year, I'm not going to give you $100 today.
Right.
If you're going to promise to give me $100 this year and I only have to give you $50, I will do that all day long.
Right. Or even if you promise to give me back $10 a year and I can hold that for 20 years.
Yeah.
Over 20 years, I'm going to get $200 back from my $100 outlay.
Yeah.
That's a good deal.
I can account for inflation and opportunity costs and other things like that. And it's a good deal. It's just a rational way of approaching things.
Right.
So my point is, if something's at a PE of 2 and next month the company is going to blow up and earn zero and not be worth anything, well, it is massively overpriced.
Right.
You know, if it's going to zero, it's infinitely priced. And
now,
you're going to do
very
well.
Forge, the engineering services business, was at some point very, very cheap.
Very cheap.
Before it was then worth exactly zero.
Any company that's gone bankrupt was cheap at one point on this metric.
Right.
And you look at some of the better performing companies that are out there. You mentioned Domino's. Well, now, Domino's is an interesting thing because there's
Amazon,
more
right?
recent things here. But yeah, look, Domino's, Amazon, Corporate Travel Management, mm-hmm. Altium, you name it.
Kogan.
Any of these things have had ridiculously high multiples, and it scares a lot of people away. So I think it is a really good rule of thumb if you're coming at things, but for the love of God, don't stop there. You need to put that in perspective of what the business is going to be doing. If you're looking at a business maybe like Telstra and you think, geez, that thing ain't going to grow by much, that's fine. That's not a problem at all. But you can approach the PE in a sensible way and sort of say, well, it's probably only worth a fairly average PE, you know, 13 or 14 times because it ain't growing too much. If you've got corporate travel, which is growing at 30% per annum, frankly, a PE of 30 is probably pretty cheap. So just think about it a little bit more beyond the first order is all I'm saying.
Now, Andrew, I was criticized last week. It was pointed out to me last week that I agreed with you. And one of our Twitter correspondents suggested that...
A lapse of judgment there. Was that John?
It was John Verpletti. I'm simply going to say...
Good on you, John. Thank you.
I'm not going to agree with you. I'm just going to say I have nothing else to add. You can interpret that as you wish. I can't bring myself to say, well done, you're right. I'll just say I have nothing else
you
to add.
You have implicitly agreed just by some of the recommendations.
Don't put words in my mouth. Don't put words in my mouth. Okay. All right, I will be a little more explicit. I think you're dead right. I think it's all about the future.
Two for two.
Stand by. It's all about the future. The PE statistically does matter on a whole of market level.
Sure.
If you bought a basket of value stocks, they have over time and are likely to continue to beat the market over time. But if you're not buying every low PE stock and avoiding every high PE stock, once you get into stock picking, then it's about the future, not just some statistical measure of the past.
Absolutely.
Shall we finish it then?
Well, let's do it, mate. Remember, you can subscribe to the Triple M Motley Fool Money podcast through iTunes or your favorite Android podcast app.
And it wouldn't be a podcast if I didn't say, and you should.
And I almost said it for you, actually. And if you like what we're doing, please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes.
A fat five-star rating.
And that's fat with a PH to the homies out there. I'm sure a lot of...
I apologize.
You've got to keep it real, my friend.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's probably an alternate spelling of real there as well. Remember, if you'd like some more foolish goodness, you can go to motleyfool.com.au/...
Just fool.com.au.
What did I say?
Motleyfool.com.au.
I've only been here for 4 or 5 years, man.
Let me do the URL, huh?
Can you do it, please?
fool.com.au/... There we go.
Until next week, I'm Andrew Page.
And I'm Scott Phillips.
Fool on.
Fool on.
The Motley Fool and people appearing in this program may have positions in the companies mentioned. General advice only. Please speak to your financial professional to understand how it may pertain to your situation. Subscribe to the free newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM. The Motley Fool operates under Financial Services License 400691.